Hello, listeners. I'm Logan McLean, and this is OJT, On the Job Training. It's a podcast where I, a journalism student, practice my craft by interviewing passionate people about their projects. This is part two of my interview with PEI musician Parker Murray, aka Zebedee. Despite early success in music, health problems have also posed obstacles for the 18-year-old performer. Today we discuss the interplay of health and religion, the healing and spiritual power of music, and the career prospects of musicians who are Christian. So, just talked about high school ending, now it's summer, and mentioned the COVID too. What are you doing these days? Where are you headed, do you think?
I'm taking this year off for summer, and so I will be trying to finish some music projects as I'm talking about the album, trying to pick up some work, which will be difficult due to COVID-19. I am doing recording work for others, which can be another topic. But in September 21, I plan to head to California for a ministry school there.
Which school is that?
It's Bethel.
Bethel.
Bethel, yes. Bethel College, I believe. I don't know if they're officially allowed to call it a college or university, but the Bethel School of Ministry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Would that certify you for something, or is it more of just education in general?
It's a more of a extracurricular activity, you could say, an extracurricular learning environment sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
So do you have any interest in going into the ministry?
I definitely do. Most of my life, I've seen myself for a career is something with teaching. Up until the past year, I've seen myself going into music education and becoming a music teacher. But lately, I've been still interested in teaching, but learning to want to teach the gospel and preach and share what I can and what I know. After this year of ministry in California, that is when I'll really make my decision of to continue to go into ministry or to go into music education.
Mm-hmm. So it's a way to find what you want to do.
Yes, right now.
See if it fits.
Because it was kind of a last minute decision to go to switching into sort of a different career path as I'm finishing high school. And mm-hmm. So this year will kind of be my decision year. If this year I can decide, yes, I want to follow through with this, or this will just continue to be sort of a side project rather than a career. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Any idea what school you would go to for either of those paths?
Not overly. I'm not extremely educated on what school I want to go to. Again, that will be 2 years from now,
yeah,
for the summer and then the summer at Bethel, right, or the year at Bethel, sorry. I'm for music education, I'm thinking of doing something with Holland College, maybe a 2-and-2 program and then a year of education.
Do they have the 2-and-2 at UPEI, is it? Or
Holland College, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
So would that be like for a music degree? Would it be?
I think so.
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. I spoke with guidance counselor and they were like, yeah, it'll work. I was like, you sure? Yeah, it'll probably work.
Yeah.
When the time gets there, I'll definitely look more into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned having epilepsy.
That's true.
And I know you've gone to church your whole life because little kids get taken to church by their parents.
That's very true.
It doesn't always stick. Did your coming to religion have anything to do with sickness?
So around probably 15 years old, probably 15 or 16, I kind of just left the church I went to as I was young. And I said, or I really reflected on what my idea of Christianity and what this church was in the church I knew was about. And it was very negative. It was very politically based. And there was a lot of judgmental behavior. And when I reflected on these things, I said, heck, if religious people or Christian people are meant to be the good, God-loving people, and this is what they're doing, I don't want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a part of this crowd, this environment that I don't feel positive in. Mm-hmm. It's not for me. When I was 17, I was then, so probably 3 years later from this, when I was 17, I was then invited to a youth group at a church in Summerside, the Summerside Community Church, by two friends of mine. What convinced me to go? Nothing extraordinary. I thought the girls were rather attractive.
And classic so story.
I was like, yeah, you know, I'll go to youth group with you. Sure, why not? I ended up loving it. I've been attending to that youth group ever since then. And gee willikers, I was just in love with Jesus. At that time, I was in a very, very dark place with my mental health and so on. And I started seeing the pastor at SCC, the youth pastor at SCC, who I've came to meet through going to youth group as a counselor. And he's really helped me through all of those mental health struggles I was having at that time and really helped me grow on my spiritual journey. He really helped connect me to God when I wasn't mature enough in my journey to connect to him directly.
So you...
Sorry, continue. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I think this would be, on a side note, I think this story would also be another great podcast story, but that would be another time.
Oh, tell it.
No, not quite yet.
Okay. I don't even know what story it is. How do I find the button to push?
Okay, so when I was first introduced to Christianity at this second go at Christianity, at the coming to the youth group, as I said, I was very, very stressed in a very, very bad spot in my life. And at this time, when I was finding out that Jesus is a healer, it's what I was praying for. I had two dear friends of mine that really, really needed healing from Jesus. And so that's what I was praying for, praying for, praying for. And I received many words from God, dreams and visions of him telling me that he is going to heal them and him reminding me that he's going to heal them. And throughout this, from my wake life, from what I'm seeing and seeing myself, I wasn't seeing any progress through healing from Jesus, and I needed more proof that he is who he says he was. Which brings me to the answer to your question. I was in the Halifax infirmary, preparing to get brain surgery to help with my epilepsy, when my mentors and friends at SCC in Summerside started praying for me to help with my seizures and epilepsy at the hospital. To give a little background story of my epilepsy, I first spent 2 weeks in the Halifax infirmary on brain monitoring, EEG, so on, and I was on half of my medication and was having 24-ish seizures a day. 6 months, 8 months later, I then returned to Halifax Hospital to continue on brain monitoring and so on. This is when I now know Jesus and I have others praying for me. On the first day, I was off all of my medication and had a seizure for 3 hours. After that is when I started to have the prayers come into effect, I should say. I was questioned by God. He said, "Do you want to be healed or do you want to take the medical route?" And I was like, "Yeah, bro, like, you know what's best, do what you want," type of thing, right? And so late that night, probably around 3 or so, I was staying up and I had a vision from God, and it was Jesus standing in front of me, and he had his arm sticked out. Sorry. Jesus was in front of me. He had his back turned to me, and he had his arm stuck out behind him, and he said, "Grab my hand." And when I would grab his hand, I knew that it meant he would heal me, and so on. So I reached for his hand and held tight. This was a vision, so I couldn't physically feel his hand, but I knew that I was holding on to him. After that, for the next 3 weeks, I continued my stay at the Halifax Infirmary, off all of my medication, and have had no seizures ever since. And so if you ask that if my religious career have anything to do with my epilepsy and my health, yes, 100% that my epilepsy and my seizures have completely ceased and are non-existent thanks to Jesus.
And you're not on medication anymore?
I am not, no.
Do you think if you started having seizures again, your faith would be broken?
No. This experience with Jesus is not the foundation of what my Christianity is based off of. This is something I'm extremely grateful for, but there's so much more that I base my faith off of. And so I know if there are hiccups in my journey, and that if there is fallbacks, that I have a strong foundation and it can't rock my faith. I will, of course, be disappointed, but I know that that I'm strong enough to understand that he wants what is best.
This definitely makes sense then, why you would want to pursue a career in this.
Definitely.
To share that with other people. But I'm glad for you, man. Like, genuinely. Because, like, that shit was terrible to hear about you dealing with that epilepsy. And, like,
it was awful.
I don't know if I ever really knew the severity of it, because no one really knows the severity of it unless you're there.
Yeah, precisely. But I think a little bit what I said there, it shows that it was extreme. It was top-notch bad. It was something that from the scans I was taking from at the hospital, the technicians have to put a certain amount of sort of monitoring equipment on you, sort of, to monitor your brain. And there's a certain amount of wires. And the normal amount of wires or monitors is like 36 or so. And I had 54. And so I was up there. They said I was the worst they have ever seen. So I'm very blessed to have come across so far.
High score of bad health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Up top. Oh, yeah. So I wanted to add, yes, that this is an extremely grateful event that happened in my life to be healed from epilepsy, which, of course, encourages me to go into ministry. But there is so many more experiences and so much more that I can't wait to share with the world.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll make sure that music's a part of that? And I guess with that, what do you think is sort of the role of music in bringing that spirituality to people?
Yeah, gee willikers. When I think of my music, I definitely think of myself or dream of myself appealing to a large audience, seeing big crowds and going to them all over the world. As we see touring musicians do, they appeal to a very large group. And I think if I'd like to take my message of ministry, but also use it in my music to appeal to such a large audience.
Mm-hmm. How do you...
How I see that working out will be in God's hands.
Christian rock is not always a very popular thing. And when popular bands start to have a message of religion, sometimes people are quick to turn their backs on them.
It's true. They're easily turned away. I'll have to be very cautious and very careful with whatever path I take. There's a great quote that says, we don't need more Christian musicians. We need more musicians who are Christian. And I think that's something I'd like to carry out, where my music can appeal to more, but also my Christianity will come along with that.
Mm-hmm. How much of that do you think needs to be an explicit message versus just embodying, say, the teachings of Christ? Acting Christian rather than preaching Christianity.
We absorb so much from our surroundings, and we learn about our surroundings, and we ended up getting more involved and learn more about others around us. And I think if we do act like good Christians, that the others around us will become more intrigued by that. And they won't necessarily associate it with Jesus, but they'll say, hey, Zebedee is really, really happy. I want to know what he's doing to find this joy in his life. Mm-hmm. And so it could be an indirect message as well. But I think, Chance the Rapper is a very good example. During his concerts, he also adds in worship songs where he says, this is a worship song. This one's for Jesus, you know?
Kanye West.
Right? Yes, he has great stuff. Uh-huh. And we can see those are very mainstream artists that are incorporating their Christianity into their music. Mm-hmm. And I think There's a good, healthy balance between the two that I could find.
Yeah.
And in a career, it won't necessarily be both together, like my music and preaching together, but it could be two separate projects as well. I might want to sometimes be preaching and focusing just on the message, but as well, I might want to just focus on the music together or apart.
Have you ever gone to see Baroque era classical music performed in a church, like Bach, stuff from like the 16, 1700s?
I'm familiar with strings and great orchestras in churches in extreme reverb environments, but I'm not necessarily sure. Yeah.
Well, this is like pieces. Explicitly religious music from the 16, 1700s that was often taking a piece of scripture and turning it into song. Handel's Messiah would be a good example of this.
Brilliant.
But they were meant to be played in big churches with big stained glass windows and incense and candles. Mm-hmm. And even as someone who doesn't really attend church myself, you understand why people do when you go see that music in mm-hmm. that place. It's holy, whether it's your kind of holy or not. It is clearly, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yes, the very presence of God is very evident in situations like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it like has the concept of God in it in a way that's like abstract. It's the kind of God that people sense when they look at the ocean or the mountains.
That's beautiful.
It's the sense of awe, the sublime, the sense of being a part of something that is so much bigger than you could ever even conceive of. That's what that kind of music is
such
like.
A positive, overwhelming feeling. Yeah. And having the fear of God.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And whether it's God that you point to or something you can't explain, which also is often just called God.
Yes.
So it's, I think you would get quite a lot out of that sometime. Mm-hmm. Nova Scotia Symphony does it on a regular basis.
That'd be brilliant.
When concerts mm-hmm. in churches ever happen again, if they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, what do you think about the prospects of live performance and stuff with COVID? How do you feel there?
I really miss it. That's just my personal, my emotional stance. I miss seeing my friends and I miss enjoying getting together and being, I wouldn't say in a loud environment, being in an exciting environment where I can get the energy off of other people and be very open, so on. But I think in a more practical sense, kind of a bad idea, you know?
The Legion used to have these bluegrass Monday open mic kind of things. And Grampy and I, our grandfather, were talking about that because he and I used to go. And we were just saying, even if the Legion ever opens again, they can't do that.
No, especially with such
packed with older
crowd,
folks. Yeah. And they were having, like, it was a great time, but it was always full.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the kind of impact that I was actually talking to Grampy about this, that it's one thing when, you know, it sucks for your buddy to lose his business. I think it really sucks for a bunch of people to lose the Legion, because the people who go to the Legion don't have many other places to go for something like that.
Yeah, if you're retired.
Yeah, or rural PEI in Nova Scotia and other parts of Canada, the Legion's been the only, you know, place to go play pool or gather for cards
to
hang out. Uh-huh. If it's not the church and that's not for everyone, mm-hmm. then it's the Legion or the bingo hall.
Precisely. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And our younger generations, we definitely find ways to communicate with each other through social media and so on. But we see it's evident in our older generations that there's less interest in
they like visiting
those phones. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You did some lessons at Long and McQuaid for soloing on a four-string bass, mm-hmm. I think. How'd that go?
That was freaking awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I was very, very proud to be asked to do such a thing. They usually only get... they get the best of those at their craft. They get the top to teach those who are interested in learning. And I was very, very proud of myself when I was asked to teach others what I do. And they are musicians, of course, who work at Long & McQuaid with rather knowledge of what's what is impressive and what is not impressive, and for them to want to invite me to teach others was very special to me.
Mm-hmm. Literally everyone in PEI's music scene goes in and out of those doors. The only music stores in town.
There, yes. So we have two music stores in PEI, yeah. And they are Long and McQuaid.
Yeah. Yeah. With like a total of 15 employees. Good folks, though.
Yeah.
Nice part of a small community.
It's true. That was my first experience teaching others, teaching a group. As I said before with the bass game, I was very interested in theory. And so often I would do like sort of one-on-one teaching things with a friend who was struggling with it and so on when I needed to show another what I was actually doing on the bass. But this is the first experience that I had teaching to a whole group. And I think it was rather successful. One thing that I shouldn't say I was nervous about, but one thing I was conscious of is still keeping their attention. And mm-hmm. So keeping my examples brief, but with using the information I had, presenting the information I had in the best way possible. And I think it went great, really. I think the audience or those who attended enjoyed themselves.
How old were people there? And about how many?
Roughly 10.
Like 10 people? Or yes. 10, how old were they, though?
Wow, there was a wide range. I know there was a student named Brennan, who's I'm familiar with through other plays and other music associations, where he's probably 14 or so. I don't want to insult him thinking he's younger, but I'd say he's between 13 and 15. And I know there's an older lady, probably above 60. So there was a very, very wide range.
Mm-hmm. And this was specifically for soloing on four-string bass, right?
Specifically for four-string bass, yeah. Yes. And afterwards, many of them came to me with questions and stuff. Not that questions about stuff that I didn't answer or didn't explain well enough, but them just interested in learning more. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anyone interested in like private lessons or anything?
Not that I think of, no. I think of, I'm the only person who has ever seen somebody play a piccolo bass, and that is including in-depth YouTube and internet research. And therefore, I think this seems a little bit out of bounds for them, this thinking it's more unpractical for them to go towards a piccolo bass when they can go towards a more traditional style instrument with more resources.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the last things I'll ask about here, you mentioned that you're doing some recording for others. What do you mean by that?
So this was a great opportunity that has came to me through COVID-19. And as we've seen a lot of these virtual choirs and so on, where choirs and groups can't meet in person, so they get together virtually, as I just explained. And so that is work I've been doing for others. There's a local church and a few different organizations, actually, that have singers, choirs that want to get together, and they will each take their own individual recordings and they will send them to me, or I will mix and master them and send the final project back. Mm-hmm. Also, I've been doing an on-hire musicianship, where I've had a friend who was looking for a drum track to be recorded, and she reached out to me to record that for her. And again, that happened with bass track and other instruments as well. And I think this is due to the fact that others can't get together, and they can't also have access to other people's resources. Mm-hmm. They know that I have the skills to play the drums, a drum kit, in microphone with gears.
Yeah, and you can produce it. Mm-hmm,
precisely. Yeah. So they say, this guy has everything we need to do, and they come and contact me, which I was very happy about. I've always seen something like this for somebody who is more experienced, who is older age, and will be hired to play instruments for others. But I am very happy that I can do this so early in my career.
Mm-hmm. How much of a handful was it to manage all of those different tracks together for the Zoom choir kind of thing? I guess, how many tracks were you sent to put together into like one?
At first, it was a little difficult. there was a learning curve. I was still using GarageBand, which is a great resource for beginner musicians. But as my needs grew, which they did very quickly, because I was more interested in making it the best as I could, not necessarily that it couldn't do what I was asking it, but that I wanted more and I wanted them to be as best as possible. So first I started on GarageBand and then moved towards a better system, a better DAW, one called Cubase, or Cubasis is the iPadOS version of it. And that made my work much easier. So it was less of a hassle, less of a handful to work with the tracks I was getting. Now, these are people that haven't done recording before.
Mm-hmm.
So the recording qualities was very mixed, were very compromised.
What were they recorded on? Just like their phones and stuff?
I think more their phones, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was okay for the quality we were looking for with
yeah.
what we were asking of them. Yes, yeah, so the recordings needed some help themselves, and that was not a hassle, but more of a fun project to work on, mm-hmm. because I have great gear, and so this is something I didn't need to work on my own. I didn't have to work around background noises in my own recordings because I didn't have background noises. And so when I was working for other people, when the recordings were a little lower quality, it expanded my horizons to when I can work with recordings that were less quality.
Now you know how to do it.
Now you're given some raw and you're stuck with it. Yeah, when I'm giving more raw tracks, I'm able to do more. The other day I was doing this choir, they wanted to have a little girl solo on it. And the recording the little girl had, there was a dog barking in the background of the recording.
God.
And so I was like, all right, man, you can do this, Parker. How are you going to edit out this dog? Mm-hmm. And this track, it didn't challenge me, but it definitely let me grow. There was a lot of off-tune singing and stuff, which I was expecting for a young girl's recording, but it let me really use what I had at hand to do the best I could. Yeah.
How did you get rid of the dog?
A lot of filters and a lot of
technical stuff.
Yeah. A lot of ins and out. Yeah. It's not too compromised, but you just have to kind of, for the part that she suffers with the dogs, you kind of just have to bump the rest up with kind of mask it behind the rest of the recording. Yeah. I think one of the questions you asked was like how many tracks I had to line up.
Yeah.
I think the most I had were like, so. Like 10 at most, which is
still a lot,
which was substantial considering these people have never recorded before and that they are not recording to a click track.
That's what I had other question.
That
yeah.
Is so
were they waited
messed
time?
Up. Oh, they're so bad. No, not so bad. Sorry, Louise. They are some
the choir
of them,
director.
Some of them are a little, just off time and which again,
they're on their own time.
Yes, exactly. They were in their own lane.
Yeah. I do that playing guitar.
Yeah.
And if I'll play like with someone who plays percussion, it's like, oh, am I really that bad at rhythm? That sounded fine to me.
Yeah. It just really helped me expand. And this is something I'm very thankful for, is that I could upgrade my DAW, upgrade my technology to adapt around the new tasks that I've been asked to do.
Good excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's
mom.
No, it's
new
good.
Toy.
I'm getting paid for all this. So
yeah,
it's comes with the job. Yeah.
All right, man. I think that's probably a good place to leave this.
Awesome. Cool.
Thanks a lot, Parker.
See you. Can you say thanks a lot, Zebedee?
Thanks a lot, Zebedee.
Peace. Great.
And that's all for part two with Parker Murray. As regular listeners know, I end each episode of OJT with the progress report, a quick reflection on learning the different parts of podcasting and independent journalism. This week's topic is photography. Now, obviously, podcasting is not a visual medium, but journalism often works best when there are images to go with the text or audio. I consider myself a bit late to the picture-taking party. I've had a smartphone and a digital camera for years, but I've never been drawn to photography as an art form. I've often been a bit embarrassed when taking pictures, and I damn sure hate having my own taken. But this year I decided to get over any silly reservations I had about getting in the way or only experiencing something through a viewfinder. Where before I thought documenting an event could only get in the way of enjoying it, I now see it just offers a different perspective. Not better or worse, just different. Ansel Adams supposedly said, you don't take a photograph, you make it. And a bunch of people have said a picture is worth a thousand words. With those ideas in mind, I've been approaching the world around me with new eyes. Now I see stories in all the images. Stories that will tell themselves if I just ask and listen. Or in this case, frame them right and time the shutter. Where before I might think that I'd make a nice picture and move on, feeling for some reason I shouldn't, I now get out my phone, or camera, if I have it, and take the damn shot. Usually several. Question for me, then, is whether journalism can also be art. I think so, especially when it comes to images. While the word art comes from artifice, something made up, I don't think that root tells the whole story of what art is, what it does. Art is storytelling, a narrative made engaging through color and contrast. Who says that story can't be pieced together out of real things? A quilted narrative, woven from scraps of truth. After all, every artist needs a clunky metaphor. You can follow Parker Murray on Instagram at _Zebedee, and his Facebook page is just Zebedee. That's Zebedee. Also check out his singles on Spotify, Friend under the artist Don Parker and Puddles under Zebedee. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at @OJT_podcast and on Twitter at @OJTpodcast. Facebook page is OJT On The Job Training. You can follow me on Instagram at logan.mclean.75 and on Twitter at loganmclean94. And finally, listeners, please check out my website, ojtpod.ca, for more pictures and content from Zebedee, along with my written stories and photography, pages on other past guests and episodes. Podcast is available there and on all major streaming platforms. Please rate and subscribe and leave a review. Everything helps when getting a podcast off the ground, and if you like this show and want more interesting guests, listener feedback is the best way to help me reach new people and make that happen. This has been OJT, On The Job Training. I'm Logan McLean. Thank you for listening.